The Tom Woods Show, episode 1189.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, the Contra Cruise, hosted by Bob Murphy and me, which people absolutely rave about, is back for a third year. Featuring special guests Jeff Deist, Naomi Brockwell, and Brett Vanott, this year promises to be the best one yet. Great folks, great fun, an unforgettable time. Sign up at ContraCruise.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Today I'm sharing with you an interesting podcast appearance I made, let's just say, not too long ago. The program is called Blunt Force Truth, and it's hosted by Chuck Woolery. You may know Chuck Woolery from Love Connection, Greed, which was one of my favorite game shows. I could not believe they took that off the air. Lingo on Game Show Network. He's been all over the place, and he's got a podcast. And his co-host is a guy named Mark Young, and the two of them interviewed me not long ago. And they are coming from this from a fairly standard, well, Republican position, but their view is that a lot of the people in the Republican Party are not so good, but they're not nearly where I am on this question. That's true. And they focus most of their attention on the Democrats and all that. So that's stuff that maybe will rub my audience the wrong way. And they do say they want to get me back on to talk more about the economic question. And when I do that, I'll probably push back a bit more. But I thought, look, I'm a guest in their home, in effect, here. And I agree with them. The Democrats are a problem. So that gave us plenty of stuff to talk about. But I think you'll hear Woods coming through here pretty clearly, like you hear on this here program. And I do get away with a lot, but it's a fun conversation just because of the novelty, frankly, of talking to Chuck Woolery after seeing him on television all these years. So anyway, I'm going to link to their website. I think it's, is it bluntforcetruth.com? Let me check. Yes, it is bluntforcetruth.com. I'll link to that at tomwoods.com/1189. And I hope you enjoy this. Here we go.
Chuck, welcoming to the Blunt Force Truth Octagon. We are bringing in Tom Woods from the Tom Woods Show. And Tom, you still do the Contra Krugman Show too, right?
We do. We go after the New York Times columnist every week because he's wrong all the time.
he's wrong every week. So it's guaranteed material, right?
Yeah.
So I said something about the economy. I don't know. Some troll came back at me on Twitter and said, well, I thought you were a game show host, not an economist. And I said, yes, I am an economist. I'm a Milton Friedman Austrian School of Economist student, and I'm not a Paul Krugman.
No, you're right. I mean, look, in this day and age, the economists overwhelmingly failed to predict the financial crisis. So when the economists can figure out economics, then I'll leave it to them. But until then, I think people with common sense are allowed to say a thing or two.
Yeah. Well, experts say.
Yeah.
So love that expression. Everybody's an expert that doesn't know anything.
Yeah, indeed.
Or an unnamed source.
An unnamed source.
So I'm going to jump in and ask you a question, Tom. You've done a lot of work talking about pre-Civil War and the Civil War time, right?
Some, yeah.
So I was, this weekend, I was actually down at the Greenbrier. And it was Memorial Day weekend. And we ended up going to a cemetery. And it was a cemetery that had a lot of Civil War dead from the Confederates. And I actually found it was attached to a church, and there were people there who were honoring the dead that were relatives from the Civil War, and they were Confederates. And what hit me was when we have the I can't even say Democrats anymore. I just pretty much have to say socialists. When we're talking about tearing down Civil War monuments, they're actually disrespecting these people's dead families.
And right. I'm wondering. And I say this, I mean, I'm a lifelong Northerner. I mean, I now live in Florida, but we all know that's an extension of New York City. That doesn't count. I spent a few years in Auburn, Alabama, but basically born and raised in Massachusetts, then went to graduate school in New York. So it's not like I come to this with a prejudice in favor of Confederate monuments, but I am a historian, and I do think that this material is often passed off in an extremely cartoonish way. And moreover, you know, when I look at a monument like this, what I want to know is, what was the reason that these men fought the war? I mean, were they fighting to preserve slavery or not? And it turns out that we actually know the answer to that. The answer to that comes from their diaries and their correspondence. I'm not so interested in what government officials said, but the point is, if you look through their correspondence, what are they saying? They're saying, we're fighting to preserve the principle that the founding fathers fought for, which is the right of self-government, the right to govern ourselves, make our own decisions, decentralize government. That's what they said they were fighting for. We're fighting for homes. In fact, James McPherson, who is an abolitionist historian, wrote a book called For Cause and Comrades. And he found that in two-thirds of the diaries and letters he looked into, the people were just talking about normal patriotic motives. And moreover, what I try to say to people who want to you know, take these monuments down, I say, all right, imagine yourself in that situation. It's 1864 or something, and there's a possibility that your town is going to be burned to the ground, that everybody there is going to die. Would you sit back and say, oh, good Union officer, sir, why, we deserve the righteous rage that is about to be visited upon us? No, you would pick up a weapon and defend your home. You would. And yet, in doing so, you wouldn't be defending slavery. You would be defending your home, and it takes bravery to stand up and defend your home. Whether or not you agree with the overall cause, those people were doing something in many cases that was entirely honorable. They're defending their homes. The situation was so bad that Jefferson Davis even had to make an announcement to tell people that if it came to that, rats are edible. I mean, these are the conditions people endured. And interestingly enough, Lincoln himself was fairly generous in his attitude toward the South. He wanted Dixie played. He wanted there to be reconciliation. It was never his intention to say all images should be destroyed and there should be no trace of this. That was absolutely not his attitude. But once he died and was killed, that kind of magnanimity was not to be found. But if you look back even as recently as George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, all the way going back to Jimmy Carter, John F. Kennedy, Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, every one of them said Robert E. Lee was an honorable man we should all be proud of. And today, so in other words, Bill Clinton said that was an okay position to have. Jimmy Carter said that was an okay position to have. But today, most American conservatives feel like they're not allowed to say that. So we've moved to a point where even Jimmy Carter's opinion is too edgy now.
I think that what's happened to the Democrat Party and the purpose behind this, the reason, is progressivism has reared its head again in the 2012 election when Hillary said that she wasn't really a liberal as much as she was a progressive. And that started that ball rolling again.
Yeah.
Reinserted itself after the early 20s and the 1900s when Woodrow Wilson was a progressive, when Teddy Roosevelt, you know, ran on the Progressive Party. He invented a third party called the Progressive Party. So with the progressives, you can't have history. You have to destroy all history and start over again because it's the only way you can do it. And so I think this is probably what's happening.
Yeah,
is that the difference in the Democrat Party is they have become so progressive. Everybody calls it left, and it surely is because it's socialism, but they become so left now and so audibly left, they're so recognizably left, that history has absolutely they have no interest in it at all. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to deal with it because it destroys their entire platform.
Well, Tom said something
about all of these, letting people get rid of all these statues and whatever, plays right into their whole deal.
Let me ask Tom something he said here, Chuck. He just said that when you look at the diaries of the Confederate soldiers, if I followed you here, you're saying they were fighting for the principles of the Constitution and the Founding Fathers, correct?
I think both sides felt like they were. They were just emphasizing different principles.
Then would it not make sense, Chuck, that the left as we know it today would also be against these people because they're against the Constitution?
Well, I think a little known fact by outside of leadership of the Democrat Party is that they hate the Constitution, they hate the Bill of Rights, they hate the founding of this country, and they want to trash it, get rid of it, and do something completely different. This has been going for over 100 years, and I don't think the average Democrat in the street even knows that.
Well, I think Chuck, by the way, hit on the key point, which is that any revolutionary is always at war with the past. You want to the American Revolution is different because that was not really the same kind of revolution as, say, the French Revolution. Now, in the French Revolution, there was an attempt to uproot everything about traditional France. So the old provincial designations gave way to département. So they, in other words, they took the country and they just divided it into a cold grid. The Christian inheritance, of course, of France had to go. So that meant that streets named after saints had to be renamed. Statues of saints were solemnly guillotined in the streets.
Yeah, we've seen this movie before, haven't we?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everything. And in fact, they even, as if to remove all subtlety, they created a new calendar so that the old Christian calendar would be gone. The year one is the year we executed the king. And then we divide the weeks. We make them 3 10-day weeks so that there's no Sunday. So nobody can know what their day of rest is, what's the day they honor God. I mean, that's what these people do. They just, and then 50 years later, of course, it turns out that the revolution of 50 years earlier was too conservative. So even those people have to be forgotten. It eats its own.
Yeah.
So we're fighting the radicals of the 60s then.
The radicals of the 60s would probably fit in at a typical Republican Party Lincoln Day dinner these days.
that's kind of where I was going there. They weren't radical enough.
Right. Yeah.
They never are radical enough.
I mean, none of them had anticipated the ongoing social revolution or transgender pronouns or whatever. It's just constantly throwing you off balance so that you've barely resolved one issue and they're throwing another one at you. And the trouble with the conservative posture is that the conservatives just want to live their lives just the way they always have. And so they're always on the defensive because they're not coming to the country with some radical new program. They're always defending. They're always trying to respond. And it hasn't been a winning position.
Now, what conservatives are you talking about exactly?
Well, I'm not talking about the conservative movement incorporated, which is
I mean, in government, what conservatives are there? Let's talk about the Senate. How many do you think we have there?
Oh, geez, I don't even know because I used to follow politics very. When I was 12 years old, I watched the entire Republican and Democratic conventions on TV. But these days, I just find it so infuriating. I mean, there are a handful probably in the House.
There are about 35 to 40, maybe.
Even so, these are people who in the 1960s would have told us not to vote for Goldwater. So I think everybody's moved to the left.
But here's the deal that I think everybody misses. And I'm going to give you a little historical fact that is absolutely true if you don't know it. And I'm sure you probably do. The Republican Party hated Ronald Reagan. The ones who called themselves conservatives in the Republican Party hated him. The Republican Party hates conservatives with the same vigor that the Democrat Party does. They can't stand them. They don't want them. And yet they all run as conservatives. It's very confusing. It's like calling the country a democracy when in fact states are democracies and the country is a constitutional republic. They don't know the difference. So the water is so muddied that when people vote for a conservative, chances are the person is not a conservative.
No, that's true. And also, I think conservatives, because the culture is so overwhelmingly against what you believe, I mean, on every level, from academia, Hollywood, just politics in general, the media, everybody is viscerally against you. Not just we have a slight difference of opinion, but you are a Nazi child killer, is their opinion. I mean, you can't have a rational conversation with somebody like that. I think the natural inclination a lot of people have is they don't like being called haters. Mm-hmm. Normal people don't like to be called haters. And so they think this person must be calling me a hater, maybe because they just don't understand me the right way, or maybe I haven't done a good enough job explaining myself. So they tried their best to explain themselves. Look, these people want to destroy you. They don't care about your apologies or, you know, how bad you feel about that joke you made 3 weeks ago. They don't care about any of that. They want to destroy you. But I think conservatives have been cowed by this and they want to appease these folks. Whereas the fact is the left, you have to hand it to them, they fight. They don't just say, oh, some politician gave a pretty speech, I'll go vote for him. They stay on that person. They'll sit in that person's office. They'll make that person's life miserable until something actually happens. Whereas our folks will go to some prayer breakfast and say, well, that was a lovely man. And then they forget all about him. They don't follow his voting record. Well, so no wonder they lose.
Well, listen, I mean, you make a great point, and I think that I can perhaps amplify what you said using Trump as an example. The Republican Party is not used to having someone like Trump. To them, it is unsavory. He's such a pig because he fights back and he screams at them and he yells at them and he calls them names. And
he put ketchup on a steak too, this. Chuck. Uh-huh. Don't forget that. He put ketchup on a steak.
Whatever.
Which, I mean, by the way, is a terrible atrocity.
Probably so. We had Dr. Bill Warner on this show several times. I'm sure you know him. He made a comment to us that one of the problems with radical Islam, and I'm not talking about Islam, but this is something I'm comparing. He made the comment that the reason that we have a problem with radical Islam is that when we're trying to deal with them, we're looking to find common ground and negotiate peace, and they want to kill us. Are you saying that the same thing, is it your opinion that the same thing is existing between the progressive left and the conservatives, that we're trying to find common ground and peace and they just want to kill us?
I think more conservatives are waking up to what's really happening and are figured out what the game is and aren't doing that as much. But I think in general, that is what's happening. And I feel like, see, I'm a libertarian, and I have people in my audience who say, you know, Woods, you ought to reach out more to the left, you know, because the left has a few things in common with us. And I feel like the left has nothing in common with me whatsoever. But every time I do, I say, you know, what the heck? I'm a good sport. I'm game. I'll reach out to the left. Not only do I get my hand bitten off, but they want to set me on fire and, spread my ashes into outer space. I find that somebody who is inclined to say that if you believe in the free market economy, you might be a Nazi. Mm-hmm. Or if you believe in the Second Amendment, you probably want children to die, is not a reasonable person and is not somebody who thinks you have a point of view. You know what's interesting about, there's a guy named Jonathan Haidt, who's a professor at NYU, and he did interesting work on how well conservatives and progressives understand each other. And it turns out that, as you would guess, we understand exactly what the progressives are saying. We know exactly what their views are. We understand. That's why we're against them. But when you try to ask progressives, well, what do you think the conservative position would be on XYZ? They have such a caricatured view, they consistently cannot state it. They have no idea what it is. And to them, it doesn't, because their view is, we're not entitled to an opinion. We are horrible people on the basis of our views, so we're not entitled to an opinion. All we're entitled to is to be smashed. Now, incidentally, on the Second Amendment question, which I don't want to divert us too much, but it is particularly rich for these people to be accusing us of all kinds of terrible things when they have no practical recommendations whatsoever. What are they going to do? Confiscate 350 million guns? Is that their recommendation? Or they have regulations they want to impose, not one of which would have stopped any of those shootings. Now, we, on the other hand, have immediate, practical, specific measures we can take to improve security in schools, and they want to stop every single one of those. Well, which is the one who's putting kids in danger?
Well, they will stop it because it's they're so anti-gun, because they want the government to take our guns away somehow.
They don't want to stop these school shootings. They need all that inflammatory press to keep driving their narrative.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back at Lenin and all of these, the communists with the fascists of Mussolini with Hitler. There was constant turmoil in the street. They loved that. It's the only way they could get ahead. These people all came from Hegel philosophy. They understood it completely. They twisted it and turned it to suit themselves. But Hegel started this whole thing in the late 1800s. And, I mean, it's a German philosophy. And all of Europe is on it in one way or another. Hardly any place is not affected by it. They hate the Constitution, so why would they even want to support anybody who knows the Constitution? I understand them. I really do. They want a new government. When Obama came in and said, we're going to transform this government, he knew exactly what he was talking about. He wanted a new government. Any way they could subvert the old government, it's a takeover. It's a soft coup. And that's what's happening with Trump. It's really, they literally have a coup going on with the FBI, the CIA, as far up as Obama, I believe, because he had a text between Stroke and Page. They text each other and said, look, the president wants to know everything that's going on here in the FBI. So he knew what was going on.
You know, the silver lining to that is that I think conservatives will have a less naive view of government.
Exactly.
Because I think they thought, well, the FBI is just enforcing the law and the CIA is just keeping us safe. Well, that may have been true, you know, in the cartoon version. But these days, there's something much more sinister going on behind the scenes. And we all wish we, you know, knew more about what all the specifics are. But what we see out in public is, and meanwhile, the progressives are just the useful idiots of all this. You know, that most of them have no idea what the real narrative is that's going on.
The Alinskyites.
That's exactly right.
We talk about Saul Alinsky on the right a lot. I hate using the right because I really believe conservatism is in the middle. But we talk about Saul Alinsky. Most people have no clue what he is, what he did, what he wrote, how people like Obama and Hillary Clinton, who are, you know, at the top of the pile in the Democrat Party, how they revered him and thought about him and loved him. And so very few people, I guarantee, on the left have read Rules for Radicals unless they're using all of those things, which their leadership is using at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And by the way, there are all right. Well, do we have to? Are we taking a break?
We are going to take a little break. Okay. Thank you, Tom, for noticing how Mark was crossing his hands.
And I was reading his mind, but also it was the symbolism. Yeah.
He's having a little mind meld here between Mark and Tom.
That's what happens. He's a radio guy. He knows what's going on here.
Yeah, we're going to take a short break. Come right back at you in 2 and 2 with more Tom Woods right after this. Stay with us. I'd like to take a minute to talk about dry mouth. It's that sticky, dehydrated feeling that can leave your mouth cracked and sore. It's uncomfortable for sure, but do you know that having dry mouth can also lead to other oral health problems? I didn't know that. And for many of us, dry mouth is actually caused by the medications we take, so it's kind of hard to avoid. You know, a lot of popular mouthwashes can actually make the problem worse, especially if they have alcohol. And the rinses that are supposed to help with dry mouth often leave you with a bad aftertaste and also bad breath. So the good news is my favorite mouthwash brand, Smart Mouth, has an all-day clean breath formula designed specifically to help those of us with dry mouth. Smart Mouth Dry Formula has exclusive moisture lock technology along with activated bad breath protection, and it lasts for 12 hours. With just 2 rinses a day, you get a full 24 hours of clean breath and relief from that sticky, thirsty, dry mouth feeling. Smart Mouth comes in a neat dual chamber bottle, so it combines to activate right when you pour it. For the most effective protection you can get against bad breath, and like all of the products we talk about on this show, Smart Mouth is guaranteed. So go to your favorite store and pick up Smart Mouth Dry Mouth Formula in the purple and white bottle. And you can also look for the new Smart Mouth toothpaste next to the Smart Mouth mouthwash at Walmart and Walgreens. And just for our listeners, go to smartmouth.com/BFT for a $2.50 coupon. That's smartmouth.com/BFT for this exclusive offer. And you were saying, Tom.
Oh, for heaven's sake, who even remembers after that commercial break?
All right, I'll jump in and ask you a question. Why do you think the left wants to take guns away? It's not because they're going to make schools safe. Why do they want them?
All right, well, I will get to that, but I did actually think of what it was. One of the Alinsky things is that I think the left has used very well is you find whatever your target is, you find what their weakness is, and you hone in on it so mercilessly that thing has to buckle. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, in the late 60s under Lyndon Johnson, there still were some welfare caseworkers who were trying carefully to evaluate each case on a case-by-case basis rather than just on a blanket basis, saying, all right, yeah, sure, everybody qualifies. And so they said, well, let's overwhelm these caseworkers with so many cases that they can't possibly apply an individual evaluation to each one, and they just have to throw their hands. And so they had sit-ins at different welfare offices. I mean, they're... You know, doggone it, they are good at this stuff. They are here to win. They're not here to win debating points. They're not here to be your friend. They don't care who likes them, who doesn't like them. They care about results. And so for that reason, I say that's the one thing about them that should be respected, that they're here to win, and conservatives could stand to learn something from this. They're not just here to be your friend or to hear pretty speeches or to say, well, you know, we don't hate either. They don't care what you say. So just go out there and fight for who you are and go out there and win. Now, in terms of taking guns away, is it to make kids safer? Well, I'm sure there are some average people who, I can understand why superficially you might think guns are killing people. We'll get rid of the guns, you know, and then therefore nobody will be killed. There are many problems with that about how you get rid of the guns. The criminals will get the guns anyway. You can kill people with bombs. You can kill them with knives. I mean, obviously, there's obviously something going on here more than just guns, because we used to have guns in schools. You could have shooting clubs in schools. There were guns all over the place.
I belonged to the rifle team in my high school.
See, there you go. And people, and I bet young people don't even know about that. And that's why, again, revolutionaries, they got to get rid of that old history. Because for one thing, it might be a rebuke to the current situation. We can't let people know we used to have guns in schools as a regular thing, because then they might think maybe it's not the guns. Maybe something's happened to the culture in between. We can't ask those questions. So why do they take them away? Well, I think partly because they want to have a symbolic victory against people the sight of whom they cannot stand, which is Middle America. They want Middle America to understand who's in charge here. But of course, secondly, I think if people are more helpless, they're more dependent on the regime, that's the position that progressives like to see people in. I mean, I'm just being blunt about it.
Yeah. Did you see this UK judge? And I was reading his decision about knives, and he literally said that they're going to have to go to these government places where you're going to have the tips of your knives ground down. Because by doing that, we will eliminate the cause of all the stabbing deaths in the UK. Yeah. So the cause of stabbings are knives having sharp edges.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
They also said, Tom, they said that who needs a 10-inch knife? Trying to tell that to...
Well, it's a high-capacity knife.
Yeah, that's right. It's an assault knife.
I mean, they're finding out literally what we're saying over here is that it's the person that holds the weapon. It's not the weapon.
But they're not accepting that either.
No, that, well,
it's the high capacity blade. You don't need that. We're going to be down to eating with sporks.
The spork still has a sharp edge. You know, exactly. But the tongs on it. But look, I mean, for heaven's sake, you can run people over in a car.
Yeah, and they found that works very well. Yeah, yeah.
But again, so why were there no? I mean, again, maybe we could start having a deeper discussion about in our society about why, you know, it's true there were a lot of problems in 1952, and I know progressives would die 100 deaths rather than live in 1952. But you didn't worry about these things. You just didn't. You didn't worry about going to school and being assaulted or the school being a drug den or whatever. You just didn't worry about that. And I think part of the reason that the left is so adamant about demonizing the past is that it is a rebuke to their own performance. They would kill to get the schools of the 50s back in terms of outcomes and the environment of the school and the behavior of the students. They would love to have that back, but it never happened. So therefore, we have to pretend that that never happened, or the 1950s were so terrible, citizen, we can't even discuss them.
Now, when I was in school, we learned that if we got under our desk and put our hands over our head, it would protect us from a nuclear bomb.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we weren't worried about shooting each other.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Now, I mean, on balance, I think, you know, it is better not to worry about nuclear war, I'll grant you. But that was outside the progressives' bailiwick, so it's not really our concern. But you're right. Yeah. So something has changed. Basically, I'm just a common sense guy who looks at the past, looks at the present, and says every single step these people have taken has led to, let's say, more crime, less safety, less economic prosperity. It's led to more depression and hopelessness among the public. It the exact opposite of their intended effect happens every single time. So I don't trust what they say.
Why do they want to live in a world like that?
Well, I think part because they expect to run it. And they do think that someday they'll get it quite right. It's mainly because we reactionaries are obstacles. And eventually they will isolate us one way or another and make us not effective anymore. But I think it's because, first of all, a lot of these people, I mean, you and I think society runs best when people are left alone. You know, society can more or less kind of run itself. You know, it has mechanisms whereby it could run itself. Whereas a lot of these folks think that, you know, I have a big brain, they say to themselves. And because I have a big brain, what a shame that my brain should be wasted just on governing my own life. This brain should be used to plan the lives of many other people. Because wouldn't planning be better than just leaving things up to individual decisions chaotically? And so they think that my big brain can bring enlightenment to these stupid rubes. I think that's basically their attitude.
So the people at the bottom of the Liberal Party then are truly just the useful idiots.
Oh, completely. I make the mistake of, heaven help me, fighting with these people on Twitter.
I never do that. I occasionally will say something that's, funny, I think, and they probably don't.
But honest to goodness, on Twitter, I'll run into people who will say, well, how could you be opposed to the such and such act? And it'll be something like the Save the Children from Poverty Act. Because they think, well, the name of the act is, so why would you be against it unless you wanted children to be in poverty? Well, because every single move these people make makes people more impoverished. Every single attempt they make to improve people's lives, so-called, makes them less employable, less attractive to employers. Time and again, oh, let's raise their wages to $15 an hour. For an entry-level job you could learn in a half hour, $15 an hour? Are you kidding me? I saw a meme on Facebook of a woman holding a bullhorn shouting, I've been working at McDonald's. I'm not kidding you. I've been working at McDonald's for 8 years without a raise. That's why I call for $15 an hour. So I said, all right, let me translate that into English. I've worked at an entry-level job for 8 years and haven't gotten a promotion. 8 years doing the simplest job known to man, and I haven't gotten a promotion. I haven't gotten another job because apparently this is the best one I can find. But I thought to myself, the only employer on earth who can stand the sight of me is the one I'm going to shout at through a bullhorn. Anybody with that kind of mentality is hopeless.
You mean
George Washington said, government is not reason, it's not eloquent, it's like fire. It's a dangerous servant and a fearful master. And this is where we are today. We're at the fearful master kind of episode of our government. It's a very interesting place to be in because it is without reason. We move without reason. I constantly check on ABC, CBS, NBC. My friends think I'm insane for doing it, but I do. I want to hear what they're saying.
Want to keep up, yeah.
And MSNBC and CNN. And if you listen to them for any period of time, 5 to 10 minutes, they are truly insane. They are without any monicum of reason. They just spew hate all day long. It is amazing.
Well, the way they've treated, I don't know if you've spoken on the program about Jordan Peterson, who's become this international sensation, this professor from Canada who just refused to go along with the law requiring him in Canada to use transgender pronouns. And he just thought, that is not a road I think we should be going down. And they have thrown everything at him in the media. They've said he's enabling Jew hatred, I saw. Now, there's nothing to that. Sometimes when you get called a name, you think, well, all right, maybe there's a 3% justification. But there's nothing to that other than this man has become a superstar for basically telling people that more or less, the last 50 years of progressivism has screwed up your lives and made you an irresponsible bum. Now, get your act together and get out there and work. They don't want that, so they've got to demonize him in every way possible. So he goes on the media, and they ask, he'll say things like, I don't think the gender pay gap is due primarily to discrimination. It has to do with the different choices women make. Because it's not that men and women are working at exactly the same job.
You mean he was actually using statistics?
He was using statistics. He's a madman.
Who would do something like that?
And then the media will come back at him and say, oh, you're saying women don't deserve the same pay as men. But that is not even remotely what I'm saying. In fact, if I may just take a quick, I do want to say a quick something about this. These people who say that women earn 70% of what men earn are such unbelievable liars, it makes me crazy. Because it turns out they're not even comparing apples to apples. They're not comparing men and women who work even the same number of hours. They just say full-time and part-time. But full-time can be 40 hours or more. Or as a matter of fact, sometimes it's even 35 hours or more. When you actually get it down to exactly women who work this many, men who work this many, you make it that precise, the gap already closes to, instead of 30 points, percentage points, it goes down to 12. 88% of what men earn. So just when you adjust to working the same number of hours precisely, you get it down to a 12% gap. Guess what prominent institution in America had a 12% pay gap between men and women? The Obama White House. And yeah, so when they asked Jay Carney, they said, look, you guys have a 12% pay gap. You know, why are you going after the private sector? And his answer was, well, men and women do different jobs in the White House. Congratulations, genius.
Well, especially in the Clinton White House, they had different jobs.
Oh, no, that's, I wasn't even thinking about that.
So carrying on with this thing, this Tommy Robinson, I think that's his name, in the UK.
Yeah.
What do you think about what's going on there? And, well, let's explain, and how close are we to that?
Yeah.
Let's explain what's going on so the people know. From what I understand, he sent out an anti-Muslim report. He's a reporter, I guess. They're now referring to him as extreme right-wing Nazi radical.
Right, which is what everybody is. So now you have to ignore that.
So he said something against the Muslim community over there for killing people and cutting their heads off and raping. And
he was live streaming them.
Yeah.
Live outside streaming of a courthouse.
Yeah. Right.
And so they took him. It's interesting because he had done something. They accused him of one crime and then put him in jail for another crime. And then they said, no one in the country can talk about this.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
total censorship.
And in fact, it happened. There were articles that had been written. And then when you went to go visit those articles later, they'd all disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah. The government took care of that.
So it doesn't even matter. Now, I don't know enough about, and Tommy Robinson is I think, not a pen name, but it's a pseudonym.
It is.
But I don't know enough about him, honestly. I mean, I think I have a gist of who he is, and I think I more or less understand what he's saying. But it shouldn't actually matter, because this is so Orwellian. Anybody, his worst enemy, should say this is bad, because if someday their worst enemies were in charge, they could be whisked away with no reporting allowed.
Well, think of this. This guy is an investigative reporter. He has built a career of being anti-radical Islam. He's shooting video outside the courthouse of some defendants who were being charged with child sex trafficking. Okay, so, you know, good guys. They arrest him, put him in jail. They immediately have a trial within 3 hours. He's given 13 months in prison, and they stuck him in a prison that is primarily filled with Muslims. And his attorney goes to the judge and tells the judge that is the equivalent of a death sentence for this man. And the judge said, that isn't my problem. And if any other media outlet reports on what I said and reports on this, they're in contempt of court.
Yeah.
So that's happening in the UK. If that can happen in the UK, what's going to stop it from happening here? Because Chuck and I talk quite often that really the model of what the left is after here is they want us to become Europe.
They always have. The Democrats have always loved Europe. They love the way they do things.
Well, they love the worst parts of it.
Of course.
You know, all the beautiful things like the cathedrals and whatever, forget that. But everything they've done to destroy their civilization, that we want to bring over. Yeah, this I want to find somebody who knows something about this case so I can bring him on my show, because
it's egregious. It's unbelievably egregious. And
and there should be, you know, for all the yammering of the media is always, you know, preening about their moral superiority over the rest of us. Right. They should be engaged in civil disobedience over this.
They should be engaged on all kinds of fronts of disobedience in this country as well. And they are not. They literally are the Praetorian Guard for the progressives. It is unbelievable.
Well, think about the media in the UK, though. You just watch a fellow journalist get 13 months in prison in an area where he's probably going to get killed. Do you want to be the journalist that's going to go report on that after you've been told that puts you in contempt of court?
Yeah, that's true. I know it. I know. But on the other hand, you know, what are you made of ultimately? Why are you here? Are you here for something greater than yourself? I mean, somebody, you'd think there'd be at least one person who would say, I'm going to stand up for the integrity of journalism. And incidentally, on Europe and America, I just spent last weekend getting all my websites in compliance with these so-called GDPR regulations. I don't want to go into the details of them. They have to do with your privacy policy. That's why over the weekend, everybody's getting, our privacy policy was recently updated. I couldn't care less. But the way the regulation is written, it applies to the EU. It's so vague and open-ended, they could pretty much pick any website and say you're not in compliance. It's just the way they like it. And I thought, well, this is the EU. I don't live in the EU, so, you know, stick it to them. But people are telling me, look, there is precedent for these things nevertheless being enforced through U.S. courts, and so you better get yourself in compliance. I mean, I don't know. Is commentary necessary on that? Or
we're actually – I haven't even talked to Chuck about this. I've actually considered just taking bluntforcetruth.com, our news site, and just disabling it for the U.K., for Europe, for the EU, just not make it available. And we have, and like yourself, we have a lot of readers and listeners from Europe.
Yeah, they should be fighting this.
They won't.
We shouldn't have to be.
They won't fight it. That's the problem. They won't. They are so down the drain now that they are so under the heel of the government that they really can't fight it.
And it's a cash cow for these regimes, because if you're found to be not in compliance, which could mean your privacy policy wasn't prominently on the page, what does that mean? Was it 3 millimeters too low? What does it even mean?
Right side, the wrong font, whatever the case.
They can fine you 4% of your global revenue. And if you think, oh, 4% is no big deal. Well, a lot of these companies are you know, have profit margins of 5%. Mm-hmm. 10% maybe at most. That's pretty devastating. Or if you had a bad year, 4% will kill you.
Yeah, the average person listening to this show is probably not even aware of that. I'm not sure they care about it, but hopefully they do, because it's coming to a neighborhood near you if it's not in your neighborhood now. And so we're a little bit ahead of the curve on that as far as just talking about it and revealing it to people.
Yeah.
But it's funny that so many fundamental things that people are just not aware of astounds me. And yet I go back in my own history. I was in my late 60s, early 70s before I came to really understand this. I mean, seriously, I didn't know. And so I can't really fault other people for not knowing, which is why I'm doing it now.
Well, right. I mean, and it's, you know, it's not even like most people are really to blame, because it's not like anybody goes out of their way to let them know about it. They have to, right. You have to know where to look. But at least with the internet, you have a lot more places you can look.
Exactly.
But in your fifth grade class, you were going to learn a certain version about the U.S. government and how a bill becomes a law, you know, just like from Schoolhouse Rock. And it bears zero resemblance to the actual backroom ways a bill becomes a law, right? You learn all these, you know, cute little benign little things, and you don't learn things like that. I mean, again, nobody cares about the details of the GDPR regulation. But the point is, if you have a regulation that's so open-ended that they could basically pick a website they don't like and trump up some reason that it's not in compliance, it should be obvious why that's a dangerous tool in their hands.
You know, it's an interesting thing. I think one of the things that Trump has accomplished, I don't think he meant to do it, but he certainly has done it, and that is to reveal what the founding fathers told us all the time.
Tell us what it is.
So the founding fathers said over and over to a man, don't trust the government. Don't trust people in power. You know, don't just lay all your trust in these people, because power breeds contempt and blah, blah, blah. And so we have been in a period of time probably for maybe 100 years. And interestingly enough, the left was the one who didn't trust the government. The right kind of went, oh, come on, let's go along and we'll play and it'll be fine. And so the left eventually, I'm talking about the, you know, all of the crazy people on the left who weren't so crazy about that. So now here comes Trump, and we find out, well, we just can't trust our government. We can't trust the FBI. We can't trust the DOJ. We can't trust the NSA. We can't trust the CIA. We really can't trust these people in leadership. Not the line, but in leadership. And you have to qualify that every time you say it. So the left was right. But yet, Farrakhan comes out and says, Donald Trump is destroying everything that hurt us, the DOJ, the FBI. And everybody's glomming onto this saying, Louis Farrakhan's on our side. No, he's not.
It's such an insane world. I can't keep track of.
Now, you're a big fan, Tom. You're a big fan of Paul Krugman. I actually found a tweet by Krugman where he inadvertently actually spoke the truth.
Whoops.
Oh. I have to hear this.
And this is kind of like the broken clock being right twice a day, but he didn't even intend for it. It says, Trump's trade security policies are deeply confusing. I believe to him, they may be deeply confusing.
You know, as I say, you mentioned at the beginning, a friend and I have a podcast we do every week, Contra Krugman, where we all we do is just refute this guy. And even his, you know, even, this is a guy who, in case your listeners don't know, I mean, he did win the Nobel Prize. Although
of course he did. But so his, did Obama.
But the prize had to do specifically with his work on international trade. It doesn't mean that his policies are, you know, to be recommended, because there are other Nobel Prize winners who have exactly the opposite view on policy. But he writes for the New York Times. He has a huge audience. He lost some progressives when he sided hard for Hillary over Bernie. I think partly because he thought Hillary would win. And I think, frankly, he was angling for a position in the White House. So what would you do if not be a bootlicker for Hillary?
Oh, but, and yet, at the same
imagine
time,
him running the economics.
Oh, geez. Yeah. And when you look at his, you look at his stuff, I mean, he's misleading, or he'll give you this part of a graph when in order to understand the point, you need to see the whole graph. Or he'll say terrible austerity was responsible for countries doing badly. But well, okay, but then you look at actual countries that really did austerity. See, what he'll do is he'll take a country that raised taxes a lot and say austerity doesn't work. Well, we never said raising taxes was going to work. What about austerity that was just spending cuts? How about that? And when you look at places like Estonia or, frankly, even Canada, they had tremendous growth after this. And there's actually a huge economic literature showing that, in general, cutting spending does seem to be positively correlated with growth. If you couldn't figure that out, you know, with your own noggin anyway, you have a huge amount of economic literature behind you. But he's extremely partisan, and he's nasty and rotten even to people on his own side. So we kind of believe that even other Keynesians like Krugman are secretly cheering us on because they think that SOB deserves it. He's got it coming to him.
Well, wouldn't he be in favor of the economic policies of Venezuela, what they were doing?
It wouldn't surprise me if he had actually – I would love to actually go back in time and see what he had said. If he was one of the progressives who in 2013 was gloating about the progress and saying, you know, anytime the right tries to use socialism as a term of derision, let's show the example of Venezuela. Well, indeed, let's. And now suddenly all those people are nowhere to be found. But you can go, they're there. They were all over the place gloating about the amazing accomplishments of socialism. And now the amazing accomplishments of socialism is how you could take a country with that much oil and starve it to death. I mean, that would take wickedness and evil of a diabolically intelligent sort to be able to do that. In the same way, how could you possibly in the 1930s have taken Ukraine, which has some of the most fertile soil on the face right of the earth, and caused a famine there? Who could do that except, you know, people with PhDs and murderous hearts?
You know, it's very funny. Someone pointed this out the other day, is that as long as we use as our experts, and as long as we use as our governing kind of yardstick, academics, we're in trouble. And the left uses academics. Our government is full of academics, and they never get it right. Ever.
But they never use the academics, Chuck.
They just teach stuff. What?
But think about it. You've got all these intellectuals that are at the top of the heap of the socialist Democratic Party, but they're not using any of the intellectual skills that they were taught. Everything is about emotion. I mean, have you not noticed that every liberal has turned into a psychic mind reader? They know what you feel. They know what's in your heart.
But even beyond just that, if we look, for example, at the law schools, in the law schools, they're not just teaching feelings and stuff like that. They are teaching, you know, actual stuff. It's just it's all distorted and wrong. So I recently did an episode of the Tom Woods Show where I looked at who's running the law schools. And of course, the law schools, it's just like it's with the universities, it's all crazy people. But in this case, it's narrowly focused on the law. There was a recent case, I think it was City College of New York or City University of New York, where a professor came to give a speech on free speech on campus. Mm-hmm. And he was shouted down and there were people protesting speech on free speech. And one of the signs, and these are young law students, one of the signs that they were holding said, F the law. Right. These are law students. Mm-hmm. Now, you'd think the dean would stand up and say, I am mortified by their behavior. And somebody holding a sign called F the law really should rethink his career path. No, the dean more or less encouraged this, had no problem with it. So the law schools are basically, to tell me that Obama was a constitutional law professor does not impress me. It doesn't surprise me at all, because constitutional law should not be confused with the Constitution. Constitutional law is a group of court cases that were decided the way the left likes, and they teach that to you. But if you're in law school, you're not going to learn about the Constitution or the ratifying conventions or what was said there. You're not going to learn any of that, the history of the clauses and why they were written the way they were. You're going to learn a bunch of cases. But what if those cases were wrongly decided? Well, that's the one question you're not allowed to ask in law school. But that turns out to be the key question.
Which brings up a point to me, and I've been mulling this over. The Democrats are always saying we need more people from our side on the Supreme Court. And, of course, conservatives and real conservatives are saying, no, we need more people on our side. So what is really the debate? Knowing that the left progressive does not honor or believe in the Constitution and really wants it to go another place, you put these people from that ilk onto the Supreme Court, it is anti-American. And when you get people from the right who are on there who are for the Constitution, who are working with the Constitution, it's confusing to me, because I'm wondering, how can you be a Supreme Court judge and not believe in the Constitution? Because I think there are a bunch of them that don't.
Yeah, they don't, or they'll say that it's a living, breathing document.
Right.
You know, which is just, you know what?
It's an excuse.
Now that actually, the idea of it being a living, breathing document, that's probably the most anti-American thing you can say, because in the American Revolution, Americans were fighting against a living, breathing Constitution, namely the British Constitution. Right. The British Constitution was unwritten. And by the way, that's why Americans decided we better write ours down, because theirs was unwritten. It could be one thing today and one thing tomorrow. So Americans would say, look, this is unconstitutional. You can't just search our homes. That's not a traditional prerogative of the crown. We oppose this. And their answer would be, well, today we say it is. Mm-hmm. So that's your living, breathing Constitution, and that's what people died to oppose. And then you want to bring that here. The idea of a Constitution is to limit the government. And if you decide you want to change it, we have an amendment process. But that's too cumbersome for these people. What they'd rather do is just pack the court with judges who will impose their own personal prejudices on the country. Which indeed they have done. And so that's why I do think the court, it's very, very important not to let the courts get it. I mean, especially with the transgender stuff, this is already seeping into every aspect of society. Nobody's, just like with the GDPR, nobody's fully in compliance because nobody even knows what's expected of them with it. How about just letting people decide for themselves what they want to do? You know, I mean, I think you would have much more goodwill toward people if people didn't feel like there was a war being waged against them.
So, Tom, where do you think we would be right now? And I'm talking about actually not just the country, but the country in general and the three of us, had Hillary won the election.
Oh, dear God.
Well, I actually think the right wing, and I actually don't hesitate to use that term because I do unequivocally believe myself to be on the right. I'm the opposite of the people on the left, and the farthest opposite I can get is the right. And I think we would be much more organized. We would be fighting on every front. We wouldn't say, well, you know, he had to approve that terrible budget. What was he going to do? If it was Hillary, we'd say, see, she's terrible for approving this budget. We would be much more alert. What tends to happen is people get in power, they have an R next to their name, and think, well, you know, that's probably a decent person. We'll just let it go. We don't have that kind of luxury to say, well, for 4 years, we'll look the other way. But then when the next person comes in, I think we would be much, much more critical about what's going on at government in government at all levels. At the same time, I think Hillary would be waging a war on us. I think via the IRS, I think via I think she would start talking about hate speech and ways to cope with it and equal time laws, and I think she would have waged all out war on us. So I'm quite happy that I feel like I've bought myself some time under this situation. But that's more or less how I mean,
do you think we would have been having this conversation today, or do you think there would have been already laws in place stopping us today?
That's a good question. I mean, that is one definite benefit of the Constitution, is that it has seared into the public mind that there is some association with between being an American and believing in free speech. And although there are people trying to undermine that, the fact is they've had much more success in other countries than they have here, because those countries can't fall back on that tradition, that political, cultural, constitutional tradition. So I think it would be an uphill battle.
You know, the other thing, I had this thought for like 5 minutes. I can't.
Well, it could be. Maybe you were thinking that Hillary would have gotten a new Supreme Court justice, which could have tipped the balance in that
way. I know what it was. Everybody talks about rhinos in the Republican Party, and Republicans in name only and all that kind of stuff, and they say that they're moderates. They use the word moderate because that makes them good. And then they also use another interesting term that I can't think of, moderates and rhinos. And well, anyway, aside from that, these people are not rhinos. They are not moderates. These people in the Republican Party are part of the progressive movement. And that's where I think people miss the boat. The term progressive to most people is such a new term, but it has old roots. And so when you say progressive, you know, it could mean insurance. They don't know what the hell it really means. But the point is that all of these Republicans who are considered moderates are really progressives. They can be progressive hawks. They can be progressive all kinds of things economically, but they're progressives.
John McCain would be an example of that, right?
Well, yeah, a lot of Northeastern people who are progressives, you know, you can name them off. You can think about them, senators and congresspeople. And that's our problem. We need to wean out all the progressives that are in the Republican Party if we possibly can. But then again, those seats might go to Democrats.
Well, think about it. The media calls Mitch McConnell a conservative.
Hey, listen, I have a cousin who I'm really close to, Bob Woolery. I'll mention his name. He's an attorney, smart guy. He thinks that Mitch McConnell is as conservative as the next.
That's what the media wants.
Yeah.
They want to limit it so that anything by definition beyond Mitch McConnell is wicked and dangerous. But I believe that it's beyond Mitch McConnell that the authentic conservatism or American right is to be found, but that automatically rules them out from the start. It's a very clever strategy, and it apparently has worked on some people. But
well, conservatives consider the far, far extreme right. And it's considered that by the Republican Party. It's considered it by the news media. It's considered by former people in Republican administrations who are on the news. They always refer to us as the far, far extreme right.
Or the alt-right.
It's just
not right. But where's the extreme left? They never refer to that. There is no extreme left.
No. The extreme left is the left.
Yeah. Well, because it's all extreme now.
There's no extreme to it anymore. It's just totally left, you know. Right. They
Chuck,
left.
Before we wrap up, I'd like to get Tom to do something for our audience.
Sure.
You and I have talked economics on this show many times. So, Tom, when you look at Krugman would be considered a Keynesian economist, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And he's probably even drifted left of Keynes, I'm thinking,
yeah,
at this point.
I think he has.
Chuck and I are big fans of the Austrian school of economics, which many people have not heard of. And I'm assuming you fall into the Austrian school of economics.
You betcha.
Could you maybe give our audience a description of what the Keynesian economics school is about briefly, and what the Austrian school is about, so that our audience understands the difference?
Yeah, absolutely. And don't turn it off thinking, oh, no, here comes the boring stuff. No, this is the thing. This is it right here that you got to know.
It's not boring.
Yeah, no, that's right. Here's the gist of it so that you can immediately see who's who. A Keynesian in general believes that the economy needs to be steered, that if you leave it on its own, it's going to overheat or it's going to underheat or whatever. You need a great helmsman. at the front of it, steering it just right, making sure that inflation isn't too high, isn't too low, and employment isn't, you know, it's just where it needs to be. And it's going to, we're going to use all our tools. We're going to use deficit spending, or we'll use creating money from through the Federal Reserve, whatever we need to do. And we have this all scientifically mapped out, and this will keep the economy on an even keel. The Austrians say that is the biggest load of hubris and bunk I've ever heard. To the contrary, the last thing the economy needs is some dork PhD with a steering wheel on it. That, in fact, the economy is its own steering wheel, because if there's an industry where there's less demand, profits fall in that industry, people move out of that industry, they get into another industry. They don't need to be told to do that. They don't need some helmsman telling them to do that. Their bottom line tells them to do that. But secondly, when we look at what is their track record, they keep trying this. They keep saying, we'll steer it. Yeah, all through the 1920s, the Federal Reserve steered the economy. And hey, we had the roaring 20s, but then we had the crash of 1929. Okay, strike one. And all through the 20s, they said, oh, don't worry, there'll be no more depressions. Right. Then at the end of the 1960s, they said, oh, don't worry, we have Lyndon Johnson in power. We won't have any more depressions. Don't worry about that. And his economic advisor, Arthur Oaken, wrote a book on this. In 1970, 1 month after that book came out, where he said, don't worry, there won't be any more booms and busts. The economy officially turned down 1 month after that book came out. Then in the late 90s.
That one didn't age well.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. That didn't age well. Then Alan Greenspan was telling us, you know, maybe we won't have to have busts after booms. He said that in the late 90s. Then we had the dot-com boom. And that, I mean, it just goes on and on. These people can't be trusted. All they do is they gin up the economy with their little steering wheel and their tricks. But it creates a fake prosperity. It's not real. And the result is that you get this sugar high. It's like their economics is like trying to nourish yourself with monster beverages all day. And yet, you know what? It's true. It's right. You get a lot of employment. You know, you're doing it, running around. You're building houses and painting things, and you got all this energy. But you crash from that because it's fake. And so the Austrians are saying that's the opposite of a healthy economy. A healthy economy involves saving and investment. That's voluntary, that's not government-driven, that's not driven by political priorities, but that's driven by real consumer demand. And it's true that you haven't heard of the Austrian School of Economics for the same reason the media doesn't want you to hear of anybody to the right of Mitch McConnell. But the Austrians are the ones who are going to tell you the truth. And in fact, one of their number, F.A. Hayek, even won the Nobel Prize in 1974. I don't know what happened that year that they let that through. But he won the Nobel Prize for basically...
Obama wasn't available.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So they gave him the Nobel Prize in economics. But it is really, really important. And it's what I do talk about it a lot over at TomWoods.com.
Good.
It has been fabulous having you on the program.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah. And we really, so if you go to the show notes, folks, at our website at bluntforcetv.com,
thank you.
You will find links to Tom's Twitter account, which is, I believe, Tom E. Woods, I think. Thomas E. Woods.
Oh, and boy, do I mean, you're just encouraging me by linking to my Twitter, because now I'm going to keep fighting those jerks to entertain your listeners. Oh,
I just followed you on Twitter, so I'm going to start forwarding them to you.
Don't you dare.
Because I get attacked, and Chuck knows this, because I'll get attacked, and it's like, oh, I can't let that go by.
He will get into minutia with these people, and I just think, why are you doing this? You do this.
But we'll have links to both the Tom shows, Tom Wood's show, and to Contra Krugman, which is awesome. And we would love to have you back. So if there's any time you can come back, it would be an honor to have you return.
That'd be great. I enjoyed talking to you guys. Thanks a lot.
Really enjoyed you, Tom. Thanks again.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's going to do it for today. Now, as many of you know, this weekend it's the Libertarian Party convention in New Orleans, and I'm going in order to participate in an event being put on by the Mises Caucus. And it's going to be a tremendous time this Saturday, the 30th of June. But I think, so as not to kill myself, because I'm leaving first thing in the morning tomorrow, I'm going to take tomorrow off from the show. Oh, gasp. There are gasps coming from the audience I can hear through the ether. But I think it would be best for my mental health to do that, so I can get prepared for this and, you know, really do what I need to do there. But we will resume on Monday as soon as I get back. And if I have a recording of what I said while I was there, then I will make that into one of the upcoming episodes. So This was a kind of a longish one today, so you got this one, and you have a little time tomorrow to catch up on previous episodes. We're going to be recording our episode of Contra Krugman, ContraKrugman.com, that other podcast that I do. Bob and I are going to record an episode of that from the convention, or at least from the Mises Caucus event. I don't think we'll be at the convention. But anyway, so that will be coming over the weekend. Probably the next Contra Krugman will be a couple days late just because of the circumstances, because we're recording it in New Orleans over the weekend. So anyway, that's my activity. That's my schedule for the coming weekend. And I'll see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.